Welcome to the Race Ride Seat Podcast. I'm Jesse Carlson, and I'm here in the Dream Factory, the Adventure Dojo, the hub of adventure cycling, the Curve HQ here in Melbourne, Australia. And today we have a very exciting episode for you. We're talking all about the Rhino Run, and I can't believe it's finally here. It's been 3 years in the making. 3 years ago, we were wrecking this course in Southern Africa, bumping around the lonely desert roads in Namibia, trying to come up with something special for the riders. And it's finally happening. It's finally here. The course is an incredible one. The course starts in Plettenberg Bay in South Africa and finishes 2,750 kilometers later in Windhoek, Namibia. It's a beautiful course with varied terrain, very hilly introduction over the first 750 kilometers through to Stellenbosch along the Cross Cape cycle route. Heading north, things get very remote very quickly. Riders will tackle the Cedarberg, touch of the Karoo before crossing the Orange River and into Namibia. In Namibia, Namibia does lonely desert roads extremely well. It's the second least densely populated place on the earth, just behind Mongolia. It's a very barren, remote place to ride bikes, but spectacularly beautiful in the desert. Who knows, riders might even see giraffes cruising around. You certainly see street signs on the side of these lonely desert roads with giraffes on them. So we didn't see any while we were riding through, but look, it's a spectacular place to ride bikes, but pretty unforgiving for those who are unprepared. So it's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out. The race kicks off on Friday the 21st of October, 6:22 in the morning. And I can't believe the field that we have lining up. It's an incredible field, possibly the best field, the strongest field that we've seen in this style of racing, in a bikepacking event. So who have we got? So lining up, we've got Sofiane Sahili. He really needs no introduction. He's sort of made bikepacking racing his thing in recent years. Winner of the Tour Divide, Silk Road Mountain Race. He's won it all. He's a spectacularly strong rider. Starts out super aggressive, doesn't sleep much. So it's going to be fantastic to see how Sofiane goes with perhaps a more remote route than he might have ridden in the past. Lael Wilcox riding as well. Again, needs no introduction from her spectacular performance in the Trans Am, winning that overall, to incredible rides elsewhere in the world. Also on the Tour Divide too. Abdullah Zeinab. Abdullah has absolutely destroyed everything he's turned his mind to on the bike in recent years, from the Indy Pack to the Trans Am bike race as well, to a 24-hour solo time trial attempt. All his efforts have been on the road though, so he's untested in a gravel or off-road event, so this will be his first foray into that scene. Sarah Hammond as well, she's done incredible things in Race the Rock in recent years. It's been a while since she last raced. It's been 4 years since she last towed the line. So it'll be fascinating to see how she goes. We've got others involved. So there's a whole host of others as well. Josh Ibbett, Kevin Benkenstein, and plenty more on the list too. Now, what are we doing today? Well, we're going to hear from three of the Curve squad, three very accomplished riders, three riders with a very good shot of taking out the Rhino Run. Who have we got? We've got Abdullah Zeinab. I just introduced him earlier. We'll hear from him, hear his perspectives on the lead up to the race. We've got Sarah Hammond as well. Sarah's talking about her comeback after 4 years to racing. She'll also talk about her perspective on the course and where her advantages might be and so on. And we've also got Stephen Lane. Stephen Lane's he's kind of new to this style of riding, but he's had some very good results in shorter form races where, you know, that the duration could be 2 to 3 days. He did dip his toe in the water in Race from the Rocks earlier in the year, and he learned a hell of a lot from that. And we'll hear from him on, in fact, what he did learn and how he's going to turn those learnings into a performance in the Rhino Run. So grab yourself a drink, make yourself comfortable, and settle in. We're going to hear from these three incredible athletes just about a week out from the Rhino Run. So let's hear from them and see what they have to say. Enjoy.
Let me get my composure, eh?
Yeah, that's it. It's all serious now. Okay. We're here in the back room in the bowels of the Adventure Dojo, the Dream Factory at Curve. And you'll hear the kitchen in the background. It's hive activity. Everyone's getting ready for the Rhino Run. And we've got Abdullah Zainab with us. Thanks for dropping by.
Thanks for having me.
Mate, you're doing the Rhino Run. How are you feeling?
I'm not sure. I had a hard ride this morning. It was pretty demoralizing. I had a good ride. Yes, it's minute to minute at this moment. Yesterday I felt great. Today I feel terrible. I'm hoping tomorrow I feel better. So I'm not sure.
Well, it's, what are we? We're just
10 days or 9 days.
A bit over a week. Yeah. So we're in the under 200 hours countdown.
Is that it?
Yeah, something like that. What's that? 168 hours in a week. So yeah, it's not too far off. I mean,
it's soon, eh?
This is a bit different for you, right?
Yes. I don't know how, I'm not sure. I'm hoping it's not too different, so I'm not too out of my element, but I just think it's hard when you're this close.
Mm. So you've had a lot of experience on the road, right?
Yes,
you've done
yes.
Fantastically well, Indy Pack, Trans Am, 24-hour world record attempt, raising huge amounts of money for Masaka, which is tied into this, but then now you're going off-road.
Yes.
Yeah, how are you feeling about that?
Scared. Oh, to be honest with you, I haven't done much off-road training. I'm not going to actually tell you the figures because you'll be like, give me the bike back. But I don't know. I look at everyone doing off-road and I think there's no way that everyone's doing off-road. It can't be that, like, hard. I know, not hard, but, like, unenjoyable if everyone's doing off-road, you know? So I'm just hoping that I do. I've done a little bit. I kind of enjoy it. When I first started training, I really didn't touch it because I didn't feel fit. So when I was riding gravel, just the nature of the terrain and what it does to you, like power, and 1 minute you're just cruising, the next minute you're doing crazy hard. I stuck away from it until I was a bit like competent enough where I was like enjoying it. So I don't know. Key point, I don't know. I'm scared, confident, not confident. I'm everything.
What are the bits about it that scare you? That you sound, you're a bit scared of it, sort of thing. What's the?
It's just hard for me to wrap my head around because I've always just been on tarmac. So it's like I'm going town to town on tarmac, and just going town to town on gravel. I guess because I haven't done thousands and thousands of Ks on gravel, like on the Gold Coast. You know, you might do 15 Ks of gravel, and then you're back on tarmac. So your mind is accustomed to like, okay, I'll do this for 15K and then I'm back on tarmac, you know? So I think the unknown of that scares me, but I'm hoping I'll just enjoy it. I'll just start, just enjoy it when I'm doing it and just expect it to be a lot slower. I mean, the gravel I have done has been slow, so I'm not thinking, oh, we're gonna ride extremely fast, so.
So, in terms of the training you have done,
yes,
how's that been working? Have you done much training on gravel at all?
Or I have. I've incorporated pieces of gravel into the riding.
Has it been a battle to find gravel up on the Gold Coast where you are?
Close to my house. Well, it came down to a thing where I was like, if I wanted to go, it's funny because in Brisbane, I don't know, have you heard of the Brisbane Valley Rail Trail?
Yeah.
So you know that. That's probably an hour and a half from my house. I had big ambitions of going and doing that, but then when I think you start training, you get tired, the idea of getting in my little car and then driving 2 hours each way and then riding all day, I was just like, nah. So we have like one road, it's probably like it's a 4K climb each way, so it's probably like 10 Ks of gravel. But I think it's definitely rough. It's not like, you know, it's not enjoyable, smooth gravel. It's like you're sliding everywhere and you're going down. So I've been finding, I would just put it in the ride, so I'd go ride on the road and then I'd be like, all right, I'm gonna go do that climb, and I'd do it, and then I'd do a loop, come back up, and I'd be like, all right, I'm gonna do it again. And a few times I was like, oh, I don't wanna go do that. And then I'd be like, all right, go do it, and then I'd go do it, and it was never as bad as I thought it would be in my mind.
Cool, so there's a hot field lining up for this race. I mean, it's gonna be interesting, right? So you've had some great results on road, on the sealed events. We've got some real hitters coming along.
Yes.
How do you think? I mean, is that exciting?
It's exciting for me because I don't feel like I have any pressure on myself because I'm not, it's not like, I think I'd have a lot of pressure on myself if it was like, oh, I've done all these gravel events and I've just won gravel events and I've done that, then I'd be like, oh my God, like I, but if anything, I enjoy it because it's like, I would be more nervous if all I had done was like cane all these gravel events and then now I'm in this gravel event with all these hitters and that. Whereas now it's like, well, I feel like, oh, they're all like, they've got the pressure on them. They're all gravel. I'm not gravel. For me, it's, I don't, and I'm hoping, I don't know, when I started it, I was like, I don't want to say too much, but I'm waiting to see if what I thought at the start of training will play out to my benefit. So I'm waiting to see if that's actually happened, if the way I trained was actually a positive. It could, it might not be, I'm not sure, but I don't know. I think when I started training, I think coming from the road and then doing a bit of gravel, I thought that may, that could be potentially more effective than just straight gravel, because I don't know. Well, that's something for later to see how it works out. But yeah, so I'm excited to see that. And I don't feel as nervous because they're all, like, I've never changed brake pads, you know, like all this stuff's new to me. So I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Seeing you walking around Curve over the last couple of days, picking up bits and pieces, pulling up, you know, pliers and looking at volley straps and that sort of thing. So it's a bit of a different world by the look of it.
Yeah, it's massively different. But I think still it's the essence of it is still you're just cycling, you know. I know it's a lot different, and I may, my biggest concern, I just hope that I'm not too uncomfortable in the gravel. Like, I've done a bit, so I know I'm not uncomfortable, but like, just, you know, 2 or 3 days in, what's it like to just be bumping around all the time? You know, but I think also too, if I just run low tire pressure and just focus on being comfortable, I should be okay.
No, sounds good. And how, I mean, there's a good, the pretty cool tie-in with the Rhino Run and Masaka, the Masaka Cycling Club. Are you excited to meet those,
I'm very excited. I'm very excited. Yeah, I'm super excited. And I'm super excited to see how they do. I think they're obviously, I think they'll be extremely fit. I'm interested to see how that plays out. So I think they've got massive, I'm excited to meet them, and I think they've got massive potential in the actual event if they can put it together.
How do you think it's going to play out with the race? Like,
going to be a smash fest. I just think people are going to go crazy. I just think there's it's just like, it's a ticking time bomb of just like competitors, you know? So I think it's going to, they're going to really, everyone's going to really want to push each other. I think for me personally, as time's gone on, I've gotten better at not getting involved in what other people do. I mean, it's something that I've always knew was effective. I knew that was effective when I first started. It's like with anything, you know, even I always knew with anything that it's always effective just to focus on your own plan and do your own thing. But I guess at the time early on, I didn't have the discipline to really, I knew that was right, but it's not like I put it in 100% in action. And what I mean by that is, like, I'd be looking at the tracker and I'd be looking where, I'd just be wasting heaps of time looking at track. Where's this person? Where's that person? I'd be doing that. And I think now, especially for me with this one, I think the only way this will really work for me is if I just don't pay attention to what anyone else is doing, which is hard in the sense because you can get pulled into it. But I just think that I'm going to make sure and set up kind of a protocol for myself, even when I check things, that I'm not aware of where others are, because really, even in my plan, it's just, I've set it to what I think is the maximum for me. And if someone can top that, then they're better than me. Which is just like, I guess that's just like, there's people who are better than you. So it's not like a shock. Like, I'm not like, oh my God, there's a better cyclist than me. You know, there's millions of those. But I just hope to be able to achieve my plan or get close to what I've set out to do. And if I can do that, then I think I'll be content. And if someone can top that, then I'd be like, wow, man, that's pretty hectic.
No, that's cool. It's a smart strategy. I mean, there's so many things that you can't control in these races. And I mean, one thing you can set out is with your plan. And, you know, if you can execute that, you can be happy at the end, right?
I just want to be able to execute my plan. And I don't want, I know that everyone, a lot of people don't sleep and they do, I don't know, you know what I mean? I don't want to get involved in other people's sleeping regimes. And I don't know how fast the race is going to be. I don't know how slow the gravel is going to be. And, you know, it's just one of those things. It could be a lot longer than I think, could be shorter, and I just want to be able to stick to my own plan, do my own sleep, and not worry if someone's 30 Ks up the road or 40 Ks up the road or 10 Ks behind me or 15 Ks ahead of me. And, you know, maybe that's something I'll explore later in the race if it's a thing that I need to do.
Sounds like a smart strategy. Now, have you studied the route at all?
Yes.
And how's it looking? Are there bits that you're, you know, excited to do? Bits that you're thinking, okay, well, this is going to be a challenge. Or
I think I've studied the route. The route looks good. I like the route. I've got it in my mind. It's good. The biggest thing for me is just the terrain and how slow it's going to be. So I've mapped it out. I know the distances. You know, all of that kind of stuff. You know, you do before, but it's kind of like, on the bit where it's like, how much food do I take? It's like, is that going to be 10 hours? Or is that going to be 15 hours? Is that going to be 20 hours? Is that going to be 8 hours? Is it going to be 5 hours? Is it not going to be, is it going to, you know, is how fast it's going to be? So that's the biggest concern for me. I'm not like, in terms of distances and closing and opening hours, I don't think there's anything on there that's too alarming. It kind of looks alarming, not alarming, but more once you cross the border, that looks a bit more like there's not much going on for a long time. But that kind of, I think that's exciting too. You know, not a lot of shops and that. Sometimes the shops are like, there's too much temptation, eh? You just want to pull over and eat everything. And then 30 Ks later, you're like, oh, there's a shop. I'll pull over and I'll get more food. And you can just waste a lot of time. So even when in the initial planning, I hope to be able to ride through a town and not, you know, not just stop because there's the option to. But yeah.
It's interesting. Do you do that as well? Like when you're putting out your notes, you'll see that there's a town here, but it's only like 30 Ks off the last one.
Yeah.
So you won't put it in your notes.
No, no,
so
I don't.
So you're not expecting it.
No, I don't put it. I just put exactly where I want to stop in the notes. It's funny because you make your list of notes and then you come back and then you look at them again and you go, oh, that's a bit far or that's too. I deliberately didn't plan until later on because if I planned at the start, it's too overwhelming. Do you know what I mean? It's like not being out, like if you start training and you're not fit and then someone's like, oh, you're going to ride this many Ks, you're like, mate. It's like your mind can't accept it. It's like, I'm not willing to accept that information at the moment. It's too overwhelming. But then like now, well, not now because I don't know how fit I am, but like, you know, when you're feeling good, you're like, oh, I can probably do that. So we'll see. I'm excited to see how it plays out with the plan and that.
Well, Abdullah, you've had a fair bit of experience in these races. Mm. You know what it's like doing the race. And from my point of view, like there's the planning part of the puzzle that takes a bit of time. Then there's executing the race.
Yeah.
Hardest part for me is afterwards, the recovery from it.
Yes.
I don't know. What do you think about that? Is that something you're sort of staring down the barrel of it going, oh, fuck, you know?
I don't know. The recovery of it, I hope that the recovery, I feel like as time's gone on, my recovery's improved just because my methods going into it have improved. And I've had a lot of help over the last couple of years too, which has opened my eyes to different ways of like preparing and training and that. So I'm not as cowboy as I used to. I used to be really like amateur in my approach where I would just like, train, do a massive ride, take 3 days off, train, do a massive ride, take 3 days, binge eat, train. And I was just putting my body into such this like pendulum of like absolutely doing nothing and complete stress. And it was, so I've kind of veered away from that. And I think it lends to not being so just absolutely destroyed after. Because you're usually pretty destroyed. But I'm hoping that this time I'm less destroyed because I've prepared better. Mm. I think that might actually be a thing. I'm not sure if it's a thing. Mm. To be fair, I'm not sure.
Mm.
But usually it's pretty terrible.
Mm.
Yeah, usually
it's pretty rough, isn't it?
Well, I think I would love to be able to cut yourself open and actually look at what's going on because sometimes it's, I think definitely, like obviously there's, chemically, you just must be absolutely depleted in all the chemicals that make you feel good. And then just you having to pay back this like loan that you've, it's almost like you've asked your body, it's like you've gone to the bank and say, I need to remortgage my house, say, like, oh, I need to get a $20,000, you know, loan out now, instantly. And they're like, you sure you want to do that? It's massive interest rate, eh? Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah, and you're just like, give it to
double
me.
It.
And then they're like, all right, cool, it's 10% interest, eh, on that. And it's going to have to be paid back in 2 weeks, you know? And you're like, all right, whatever, I'll deal with it when I do it. And then it's quite hard. I guess it gets easier, not easier, but the more you've done it, I've only probably done it twice really to that degree.
Mm.
You kind of, the first time you feel, you don't know what's going on, so you're like, I'm sad. You go from being extremely hungry into a food coma to feeling clinically obese to being like tired and sad and then happy and then like, you don't know what's going on. But then after you kind of go, oh, I get it.
Mm.
And then it feels like you kind of experience that on a micro level in training. Mm. I don't know if you've ever experienced that in training where it's like you kind of get this similar emotional curve or profile and physically when you train a lot, you kind of go, I'm kind of feeling extremely obese today from just my body just feels inflamed, and then it goes, I'm in a food coma, and now I'm tired, and then I'm energized, and then now I'm back on the bike and I feel good. And so you kind of get used to it, so in a really messed up way.
So it's pretty exciting in the countdown to this big race. Now, when you're out on the road in these races, what I mean, some people try to maintain a pretty level headspace. Some people try to pump themselves up. Some people just embrace the suffering,
you know,
driven by self-loathing and hatred just to push through. What do you think drives you when you're riding?
Honestly, I got no idea. I don't think I've ever really worked it out, eh? I've tried to work it out and tried to articulate it, but sometimes it feels put on, if I'm being honest. Like, a lot of the times, if someone said, why are you doing that? I'm just like, oh, I'd clutch at straws and go, oh yeah, it's because of this, it's because of that, it's because of that. I don't know, I'm just drawn, simply I'm just drawn to doing it. I don't know why. It's almost like a curse in a way, because I'm like, I wish I was drawn to something like 100 meter sprinting and I had fast twitch muscle fibers and a six pack, you know what I mean? Like, but unfortunately in my life, I've just somehow stumbled along this bizarre sport where I feel, I don't know if I'm naturally tended, like, it's something I'm trying to work out, and like, I'm like, do I have like genetics to actually do this? You know what I mean? Like, in your head, you're like, am I actually predisposed to being good at it? So it's just, I'm actually not even sure. But when I'm out there, oh man, I just like the challenge of it. I enjoy the challenge of it. And I enjoy the making the difficulty not so difficult. I don't know, that's a kind of satisfying process, I think, when you're doing something really difficult and you know it's just absolutely difficult by anyone's standards, and then you're in your mind like, okay, how can I make this less difficult for me? So I don't really go down the self-loathing, like, I hate myself, I want to suffer, because it's hard enough already, and I think adding to the difficulty only makes it, oh, I wouldn't want to do that, you know what I mean? So I definitely don't do that. But I definitely enjoy trying to keep a level head, and it feels like you're unlocking levels. I like getting to like a really high threshold of just like, this is absolutely fucking intense, and then breaking through that. And in training, you kind of experience that, where it's like you can have a really hard 8-hour ride, 5-hour ride, for even 2-hour ride or whatever, and it's like you get to this just melting point, and then you cross it, and then suddenly it's like you're in another world, and it's like your mind shuts off a little bit. Well, it doesn't shut off, but like, this whole like back and forth in your head, like you're playing ping pong, quiets down, and suddenly you're just like, whoa, this is quite fun. You know what I mean? I feel like I'm drunk. But you're not really drunk. You're just really just quite focused and level-headed, and it feels quite nice. I think that's what really I enjoy out there.
Yeah, it's fascinating. The states of consciousness that you sort of travel through on these races are kind of fascinating. And I'd love to see
a brain scan of it. You know, obviously you can't quantify it just with a brain scan, but that'd be a nice way. I wish someone could just hook me up and say, oh, look at his brain waves. Like, what's happened? Like, you know what I mean? Like 300K in, 400K in. They're like, oh, he's in beta. He's really active. He's hating himself, right? Oh, he's self-loathing. And they're just like, what's happened to his mind, eh? These gamma brain waves is just fucking peaking, eh? He's in God mode, eh? Or it's like, oh my God, he's in gamma. The sun's come up. And then 2 minutes later, it's like he's crashed, eh? He hates it. I would love to see someone do a study on that.
It would be fascinating, yeah. I mean, I've got this cartoon in mind. I can't draw, but I wish I could draw this cartoon. Like, for these races, it's sort of like, you know, street signs you see on the side of the road, riding away, you see a street sign which says, like, you know, euphoria, highest peaks of euphoria, next 10Ks. And then there's another sign which is like, deepest bowels of depression. It just keeps going between the two.
Yeah. I think for me, like, I try and, it's in a weird way for me, if someone said, oh, euphoria, I try and avoid that. I try and really stay away from getting too sucked in to the momentary, like, oh my God, I'm living my best life. This is amazing. I feel like a god right now. You know what I mean? When that starts happening, it's not like I shut it down. But I really, like, I'm like, I don't get involved. Like, if someone else was running in my head going, oh my God, like, this is amazing, they're like blowing streamers and that, I don't even give one inch. I try and not give one inch of, because it's really, that's, I think for me, if I've learnt one thing, that just becomes a recipe for absolute disaster, eh?
And it's just as weird as the other direction too, isn't it?
Absolutely. Like, so, yeah. So when it gets, But I found for me, like, that if I didn't get involved too much with the euphoria, then when the sadness come, I was more able to just to leave it and just continue on writing and not get too involved. Because once you start getting involved with each one and you start, it's weird because you're describing something you can't, it's not really, you can't quantify that. Like, oh, Jesse right now is getting involved in his euphoria. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, totally.
But mentally for you, as the person experiencing it, I guess the only way you can describe it is like you feel euphoric and getting involved is like now, I don't know, thinking about it really. You just start getting involved, thinking about it, dwelling on it, fantasizing about it, getting excited about it actively. And then I think that creates a really bad habit. That's a bad habit, eh? I think that's bad endurance habits because then when you get sad a bit, which inevitably comes, it comes knocking at the door, there's such a momentum of that behavior where it's just like, oh fuck, now I'm involved in this. And then it's just like, oh my God, when's this going to end? And I think for a lot of people, that's what derails them. And then they're in that sad pit and they just stay there for too long, too active in it. And then they just go, nah, I'm done. This is too much for me.
I'm just chuckling thinking about this conversation of what people who haven't experienced this sort of things are thinking. So,
But normal people just be like, why would you limit feeling absolutely ecstatic? You know, because that's what everyone wants to feel. But I think it's kind of like a long-term vision of just being able to actually enjoy the whole ride and finish, you know, which overall, you kind of take out the peaks, you take out the valleys, like the depth, and you kind of end up overall with a nicer experience because you're not hating it the whole, like 50% of the time, you know? You're kind of in a chronic level of just slowly enjoyment, like a little bit above baseline. Whereas if you averaged out peaks and absolute holes, there's nothing, you know what I mean? They cancel each other out, really.
Yeah.
In a weird way.
No, it's fascinating, isn't it? That the roller coaster ride that you
it really is roller coaster ride,
and so it must be kind of strange for people who haven't experienced that sort of thing to be listening to this conversation. But I'm enjoying it because you know, not too many people have experienced that sort of thing. So it's
emotional roller coaster.
It's always cool trying to talk about it and see how other people have felt about it. So now, in the lead up, so in terms of the race coming up, you reckon you can win?
Look, I don't know. I don't know if I can win. I think for me, the biggest thing will be, it's hard. I've got to watch my words because I'm not sure. I trust the training I've done. I trust the help I've had with training. I had a friend who actually became, he's a coach friend who helped me from Canada. And he was massive for me. He was really helpful. So I don't know. It's kind of one of those things I'm waiting to find out. I think for me, a couple of weeks before it's like the doubt starts to come in and all these weird things start coming up. You get all these weird aches and pains. You feel a bit tired, lethargic, out of breath, all this weird stuff. So it's kind of like you don't know where you're at. I just hope to be able to have a great performance and enjoy it. I really want to be able to have the performance of a lifetime for me and enjoy it and not be like hating it or the whole time, you know what I mean? I want to be able to enjoy it and really perform at a high level.
No, I'm sure you will. Hey, one thing I've got to ask too.
Hear me.
You've gone from a TT bike, basically, onto more of a gravel bike.
Yeah.
So what are you riding? You got the Curve Tyre Curve.
Yes.
Eckar.
Yes.
Campy Eckar. How's that been feeling? So you went from
TT bike. It's very hard. It was very hard. You can't, honestly, I'm not TT. I'm not a gauge. Yeah. I can't gauge. For me to be comfortable on a gravel, I think it would take me another year and a half.
Yeah. But you came from like a super stiff TT bike, right?
Insane.
Yeah.
And a very specific position. Like, it's hard to really fathom because it's like, it wasn't just a TT bike. It was like 2 years of customizing this TT bike for me, like thousands and thousands of Ks, just riding on flat road in a single gear with my cleats. I would have cleat extensions, pushing my feet as far back as possible. So the flattest foot you can think of, really in one position. And then going onto another bike, it was just like, I didn't know how to ride. I had no power. I didn't know how to ride. It was really quite difficult. It's only now, just now, like literally in the last month, starting to become like, I feel like my body's just now starting to cope with the difference in position. Because at the start, I was like, I need a two sizes smaller. I need the seat to go way more forward. I need my cleats to come the whole way back. I tried to make it a TT bike, essentially, but I couldn't.
Mm. Well, I've seen the setup. It's like you're forward and fast.
Yeah, I'm still trying to make it a TT bike. I can't. It's not working. But I really struggled with the stiffness, and I still struggle with it mentally. I don't know if it's just in my head, but like, for example, like I had an issue with the bike, so I had to borrow someone's road bike, and like it was like doing drugs for me. Like I was on this guy's road bike and I was in love with it. Like I was just like, I need to ride this, like, and it was nothing. The curve bike's amazing. It's just, my body just went defaulted into that position where I was like, oh, I feel like
I'm back home.
I don't know if it's the power production or it's your muscles or I'm not sure, but it's definitely a comfortable, very comfortable bike. Because I would ride it for like the TT bike and just my road bike and that, like after 8 hours or 6 hours or 7 hours, you really feel it. Like you really feel it. But with the bike I'm riding now, after 6, 7, 8 hours, even 9, 10 hours, 11 hours, you don't have it. I say this, I'm in the least amount of pain I've ever been in. I think that would be because of a large part of that would be the bike. So I have no chronic pain. Whereas usually I have a lot of chronic pain, a lot of chronic shoulder pain, a lot of chronic hip pain. I have none of that.
Mm. Oh, that's great.
So the position can't be that bad. In my mind, I go, I might not feel comfortable mentally sometimes, as in it's my most optimal position for muscles that are tight and loose or whatever, but I don't have the, like when I was on time trial bike, yeah, I felt powerful and strong and my road bike, whatever, but I had chronic hip pain, back pain, got a back injury, had a shoulder in, like scapula was all destroyed. So.
Well, that's the thing. It's sounds like you spent so much time in that TT position, riding those bikes, and it's a whole new world, this sort of gravel scene. So, plenty of excitement ahead, plenty of time to
learn the ropes, eh? Yeah, also a hard thing was coming from time trial, doing a lot of time, like 2 years of time trial training, was letting go of power, letting go of speed, and honestly, just lifting my head up was hard. And I still struggle with it, to lift my head up, because I swear to God, it's like my spine wants to look at a Garmin all the time. I swear it's bad, eh? Like my mind wants to just go, what's the power? What's the speed? What's the cadence? What's that? Because when I went from like road riding long distance, I didn't care about power or speed or anything. I didn't look at anything, right? But then when I went time trialing and then I tried to do a 24-hour time trial and failed, I was like, oh my God, I need to actually pay attention to things because it's important. So then I spent like months really paying attention to it. And then suddenly you're not paying attention to it, but your mind wants to pay attention to it. So I've taken off the power pedals off the bike. Today I took them off. I put on normal XTR pedals.
Mate, you're a new man. What's going on?
I put on XTR. The Garmin now is on battery save mode, so it goes off. I don't see nothing. My chin's elevating slowly, eh? And like I've got a whole new world vista appearing.
Yeah, I saw that. You got a broomstick or something.
Yeah, like my neck's kind of lifting now. And I'm like, oh, it's actually nice to look up and look around and like not be thinking, what's my power? Why has it dropped 10 watts? Why is my heart rate 5 beats up versus, you know, yesterday was 120, now it's 125. My power's 20 watts. That's, oh my God, I'm failing. I'm not fit. Who am I, you know? So I'm happy that I'm done with that. I think it was effective for training because you do really get a lot of it. Like, there's just the science of it. That's so effective, you know, and that helped me out heaps. But it's nice to let go of that and kind of go back to where I started, which was just like ride to the next shop, ride to the next shop, ride to the next shop, sleep.
Well, plenty of excitement ahead.
Thanks, mate.
Final thing, mate. I was excited when I went to the supermarket the other day. Broccoli back down to $3.50 a kilo.
I am actually going to eat a lot of it tonight.
Yeah.
Before the plane. I might even eat it tomorrow for lunch too.
I thought I had a lot of broccoli and then you were just telling me before
fiend. You have got no idea. I can give you some stats. I used to eat 2 full heads of broccoli before I ate dinner. Before. So you have to think.
just to get you ready for dinner.
That's just to get my stomach.
Stretch it out.
And just that's what I used to do. And before that, you know the 500 gram packs of frozen vegetables? I used to eat 2 of those before dinner.
Wow.
See, that's another weird thing. This is another weird synchronicity that prepared me for long distance riding. When I first got into it, I had that stomach capacity. And I thought, you know, I was like, I'm burdened by this because I have to eat a kilo of vegetables every night. Like, this is getting bad. But when I came into the ultra thing, I was like, wow, this is a really healthy sport where I can live out my little eating disorder that I've got. But I've trained myself to eat less now. I have just one head a night.
Just one a night.
Yeah. It's
amazing.
I don't want to be too, you know, animalistic in front of my partner, right?
Just gorging on vegetables.
Yeah. Hey.
No calorie, just straight in.
Yeah, no, man. So I'm excited. I love broccoli. I love vegetables. Hey, that's a side topic, but
mate, it's awesome. Can't wait to see how it all unfolds.
Mate, I'm looking forward to it.
All the best. Good luck.
Thank you.
Looking forward to seeing you out there, and yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how it unfolds.
Mate, I'm actually very excited. I'm praying for a miracle, and I'm praying that it's not too much harder than road riding. I'm praying.
Well, we'll find out. We'll check in afterwards. And
you can check in, eh?
What the results of the study were.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Abdullah.
Thank you.
Okay. We are here with Sarah Hammond. Once again in the kitchen at Curve. So if the doors slam and people make lunch or coffees, you'll know what's going on.
The fluoros are so bright. I'm wearing a hat.
Sarah is on the way to the airport. Pretty much right now. The bike's packed. You're off to the Rhino Run. How are you feeling?
I am. I'll be happy when I'm on the plane. Once you kind of get out of your home country, it feels a bit more real. So at the moment, it's still the 24-hour panic countdown of double-checking backpacks, bike boxes, making sure everything's in there, unpacking it, repacking it, retaping it. All those kind of little last-minute anxieties. But excited to get away. It's been a long time between travel and multiple lockdowns and being able to take our bikes somewhere nice. Last time we were kind of traveling, we were scouting the route for the Rhino Run, and it's taken almost 3 years to actually get it off the ground.
It was a long time ago. Feels like a long time ago, but also 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, it's a blur. A few more wrinkles and not enough bike rides in the last few years. But it'll be exciting. I'm excited about actually having some time out. Just being able to kind of ride my bike, and the same thing that used to draw me to these races is just the fact that I'm kind of out of reach from everyone. You get to kind of switch off and not have to worry about those emails or those social engagements or, you know, ticking the boxes of everyday grind. Just have to ride your bike and, follow the line.
So it's a pretty exciting lineup in the race. It's, we've got all sorts of people coming in. We spoke to Abdullah earlier. We've got Leia Wilcox Racing. We've got Josh Ibbett, we've got Jimmy Roslin, Curve's technical lead, the dark horse, the dark Swedish hammer. You excited about the race? It's pretty cool to see such a big lineup.
Oh, it is. It's awesome. We've always spoken about the first race is the race you want to do. All the ones after that, you want to be at the first edition because there's a little bit of... it's a little bit of the unknown. The route or the route hasn't been raced, so we're kind of testing it. Whether it runs again, who knows? This might be the only time it actually runs. So for all those people saying that they're going to do it in 2023, too bad. it's exciting because you don't have any research to fall back on outside of, you know, looking at Google Maps and checking out where your resupply points are. We don't know the condition of the roads. We have a vague idea of what the conditions of the roads are. I think that part of it's kind of cool because everyone's just in the same. Everyone's just going to suffer the same amount. There's no one who can kind of give us tips on the years before. So that part of it is pretty cool. And there's so many big names coming from all different kinds of riding, and it'll be interesting to see how many of them have had experience with this kind of terrain. It's going to get pretty rough. And I think the closest thing that comes to that is the outback riding here in Australia. So there's a few people that will, I think that will not have too much, well, it's still going to hurt, but I don't think it's going to be as much of a shock. And that's probably myself, Benke, and April are probably the three that kind of know that, that rutted, corrugated, you know, bone jarring, eyes rattling in the back of your head kind of, oh, sorry, gravel. It's just, it's known as gravel. Sorry, it's just a gravel race. But yeah, that's going to be a bit of a shock for some people, I think, and an advantage for others.
Yeah, so we've got riders who've had, you know, great results. So Sofiane with the Tour Divide and a whole bunch of other things, and, you know, people who've done well on the road. But yeah, it is a very special kind of gravel, in inverted commas.
Gravel.
Is that, so, the outback riding that, you know, we know and love from Race the Rock, it can be it can be a real shock to the system for people. And unless you've been out there and experienced those thousands of Ks of corrugated roads, it's hard to describe how hard it is. It's like a full body workout, isn't it?
Oh, it's fine. You just find the smooth bit. And then you just go back and forth constantly, and then someone will drive past in their Land Cruiser asking if you're drunk or asleep because they can't work out why you're zigzagging. And it's because, not because you want to do more kilometres, it's because there is no smooth section. There is no side part. There is no, you know, the, most of the time you're just constantly trying to find some relief. It's, it could be graded in parts, and sometimes that can be a blessing where the roads have been treated and, you know, it could be smooth sailing, but sometimes that can be really bad because you settle into it and you're like, this is amazing, and the next minute you're back to, you know, riding the corrugations and hitting the bull dust and all that other kind of stuff. But who knows, like, I know we've driven parts of it. I mean, it wasn't that rough. It only, you know, broke our rear windscreen in the car, so it was I'm sure it'll be fine. It was, yeah, just a small rock that broke the rear windscreen in our car. But
that was
yeah.
an expensive trip, wasn't it? Rhino ended up with the drone, the nerd bird.
So, yeah, I'm sure it'll be fine.
Well, that's the thing. That's
I'm just taking the piss, though, yeah, like, to an extent. It is going to be rough, but, like, it's...
I guess what I was getting at, do you think that's going to be a bit of a surprise to some people?
I think so, yeah. I think people that are used to riding more... manicured gravel or like well-known trails tend to get a lot of use, so there is, you know, the, you know, the more people that ride the trails, they get worn in, they can be smoother. The only thing that can kind of change that is weather, and the drier it is, the more corrugated it can get with high winds, and there's a lot of wind out here on this course, depending if it's in our favor or not. But yeah, or if we have the rains, it just turns into peanut butter. It's just a mud party. And I think, yeah, there's a lot of riders that will not have experienced this kind of rough gravel riding. It's tough. It's probably, it's not the physicality of it. It's the mental game that you just can't ride it fast. You can't just hit it hard and hope that, you know, around the corner it's going to get a bit easier. It's just ongoing. It's just bang, bang, you know, bumping around. You know, you get some good runs, but, yeah, you settle into it, I guess, eventually. Yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting. Abdullah dropped in a couple of days ago and he's getting his bike serviced. And he's like, oh, my bike's pretty cooked. And I was like, yeah, yeah, I heard. And he's like, I haven't actually really been riding any gravel. And I'm like, oh, you're going to have a good time. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how he goes with that, because Abdullah's fast. He's all about just head down, eye on the prize. And, I mean, he's strong, he's fast. He's proved that in the Trans Am. He's proved that on the IndyPack course, his 24-hour attempt. Having this kind of terrain where you just can't, you can't hit it at 35k an hour. It's going to be interesting.
So how do you think the race is going to play out? What do you think is going to happen?
I don't know. Like, it's what have we got, 40 something people, probably 10 to 15 fairly strong contenders, and then there's probably five dark horses and, you know, up and comings, and it'll be the usual thing. Everyone will just ride off. Well, the strong riders will just tear off on day one. It's always the way. You just kind of wave goodbye to them and hope that you'll see them in a few days. But yeah, the normal pattern is 3 days. It takes about 3 days for the race to take a bit of shape. 3 days is normally the first marker for people pulling out. And there is some rough stuff in the entree. There's a lot of fast stuff in the entree too. There's sealed roads and whatnot, but there are some sections that where people kind of get to dip their toe in what's coming up. Yeah, it's hard. Like, there are some serious riders coming this year, and yeah, it's always anyone's race. It's not always about how fast you can ride. It's just about, you know, staying on the bike, not letting all the stuff around you defeat you. So, and for that reason, there's a lot of people this year that know that mental game. So yeah, there's plenty of competition. Adrian's another one. Adrian, I'll get his surname wrong. Leachy. He's another really strong rider. I think he'll be one up at the front as well.
So yeah, a lot of big names racing, unfamiliar course, first race on the course, so it's going to be really exciting to see how it's going to play out.
And I don't think anyone's actually ridden it. I know some riders will come over early and ride the route. And that's fine. I kind of like it when no one has, because then it's the same for everybody. But yeah, I don't think anyone's had time.
And have you studied the course much? What do you think of the course? Are there bits that are sort of worrying, or is it all? Does it look super remote compared to what you've done in the past?
I don't think it's remote compared to what I've done in the past, but I know it's going to be remote compared to what other people have done in the past. If you're used to riding in Europe on a road race where you know, there's somewhere to stop every 30K for a warm bed and a nice meal. And I know that's not the case everywhere, but once you're into Namibia, the stretches get quite long. We've driven it and we've kind of seen what's at these locations, and there's not a lot, especially towards the end of the stretch in Namibia when you... around Oz to Solitaire. I think Oz, by memory, has just a small shop, that's it. And Solitaire has a few items, a few places, sorry, to eat, but...
And some ground squirrels.
And some ground squirrels, and the best apple strudel in Africa.
That's very good.
Thanks to the German influence. But yeah, they are some decent stretches, and for people that aren't used to that with water and food, I think you'll have to make some good decisions and carry a little bit more, especially if you get into Oz and the little store isn't open. However, there is a lot of guest houses as well, and we saw that when we were driving through, stuff that isn't necessarily on the map. And you'll drive through an area and there'll just be this little guest house kind of in the middle of nowhere where most of the time you can probably easily knock on the door and get some water, and they might have some, you know, snacks at the reception. So I've kind of taken a bit of comfort in knowing that part. But I don't think the stretches are as bad as what we've done in Race to the Rock. You know, we've had stretches over 500 kilometres without resupply. So it's more than a, you know, two bar and sports drink kind of pack on your bike.
The gels.
So always pack enough food for if the next resupply isn't open. Otherwise, it'll be a waiting game too. But the entree, I don't think there's no concerns in the entree. There's locations. I put the logistics together for the website, and there's locations I didn't put in because it was just getting ridiculous how many small towns are on the way.
Places, yeah.
Yeah, so it's... The temptation can be to stop too often too when there's a lot of resupply points. When you know you've got 150K to the next one, you kind of, you know what you've got to do. You've got, you know, X amount of hours you need to push through. Whereas if there's something every 20K, it's the temptation to stop and get water or use the toilet or get a soft drink or get a bag of chips or stop, so on. But I know there are a few people that think that some of the stretches are quite long, but they haven't ridden things like Race to the Rock.
So when you're out there on these lonely roads, what are you going to be thinking about? What are you going to use as motivation? What do you use?
My sister's wedding.
Race to the altar.
This is, get to the wedding. Yes. So I'm definitely, I've got a pretty big carrot to chase. I've got time. My sister's getting married on the 12th of November. Should I not get home, I will no longer have a sister. But yeah, that's a big part of, I guess, my motivation is getting to the end in time to get home and have time to fix up the sunglass tan mark, the hideous sock tan on my legs for my dress, rehydrate my skin, do everything so I look like a normal person come the wedding. But yeah, look, that's a really big motivator for me. The other one is seeing if I can still do this.
It's been a little while since you've
It's been a long race. While. Yeah. I haven't raced since the Tassie Race to the Rock. Over 3 years ago now. And a lot's happened then. 3 years? 4 years?
Whoa.
Three.
Yeah,
4 years.
2018,
wasn't it? Yeah. It's 4 years. Apologies. 4 years. Oh man. Now I feel even more worse. So yeah, bits happened in 4 years. I'm nervous. I absolutely am. I've gotten a bit older. I need more sleep these days. I'm a bit crankier. COVID kind of threw everyone around, especially for those of us that were in Melbourne. It was a pretty bleak time, and it's taken most of this year for me to actually want to ride my bike again. Not because I didn't want to. It was just such a tough stretch. And I was all kind of geared up for the Tour Divide, and I know that was a bit disappointing that I didn't get there. Part of it was I wasn't ready, part of it was I choked, part of it was life. But the big difference between that now is I'm quite excited to go over and do this race. I'm not having meltdowns every couple of days about not being ready or, you know, the planning it takes in the lead up. Yes, this last 24 hours has been a bit stressful, but that always happens when you've got to catch an international flight. So for me, if I can get through this without too much damage, it would be great. It'd be awesome to see what myself and my awesome bike can do. I'm riding the Big Kev this year.
Kev Big Kev. It's the only one out there, really.
It's the only one out there.
Yeah. The little Big Kev.
The little Big Kev.
Okay.
So
yeah, how's that been?
It's been awesome. Originally I had that for the Tour Divide. So it's what can we call it? It's a drop bar gravel bike with mountain bike tires.
Yeah, slightly fatter tires than your normal gravel bike.
Yeah. It's a little bit of everything. We're creating another kind of riding.
Gravel. Yeah, it's gravel plus. Gravel plus.
Gravel plus. Yeah.
It's like
GXR XL.
It's like a Kev.
GXR plus.
Yeah, it's a GXR Plus or a GMX Minus.
Yeah.
it's just like Kev, but a bit bigger.
Two Belgies Plus, yeah. It's an awesome bike. I've had a bunch of fun riding it. I was on a GMX Plus before that. And don't get me wrong, that's a wonderful bike, but it's not a fast bike for racing. It's, the Big Kev has been great. And I'm looking forward to seeing how it runs in this race. I've been... riding it non-stop for about, I probably have 6 months. And it's been loaded for about the last 6 or 7 weeks. So I've been making sure that, you know, carries everything okay and just obviously getting used to load on the bike and confusing people on the street about the fact that I'm just going to work, but I've got enough supplies to get me through 2 weeks.
I mean, you're a bit of an introvert, Teef. And so how do you cope with being at a velodrome on a loaded fat bike, whizzing around in circles with people on TT bikes and so on going around?
So funny. It's like, you just get that look, are you in the right spot?
Are you lost?
Yeah. It's been entertaining, but I've gotten to know people quite well there because I've been training there since January, initially for the Tour Divide, because, yeah, the Tour Divide's just at a velodrome, right? It's just, it's, velodrome's good for just doing sub-threshold kind of efforts, but, yeah, people have gotten to know me, and they laugh, they've been laughing the last 6 weeks as the load on the bike's gotten more and more, and, yeah, it's quite funny.
See the same people each morning.
You do. There. People have similar routines. So you kind of, you never speak, but you get a little nod or a smile. It's just like, hey, hey, okay, can't talk in the red.
I guess the other challenge in your preparation has been on our favourite Hills of Horror. Horseshoe of Horror, sorry. Hills of Joy, Horseshoe of Horror. On Warmer Street. Not having your favourite dog there anymore.
Yeah, Warmer Street also... The name of our handlebar.
Yeah, name of the bars.
Yeah. We'll leave a link at the end to buy
That's
that.
Right. We'll do some
subscribe here. Yeah, the dog that bit my finger before the Trans Am and thought it was going to get infected while I was doing that race. yes, I have my favourite dog, Charlie, that's not there anymore because his owners decided to sell the house. But that's not important. But yeah, I've been using that section there for hill reps, and I'm sure a lot of people have seen me just riding back and forth with a loaded bike, as you do.
So how's the preparation gone? I mean, you've been working pretty hard. I mean, yeah, people like us, we're not full-time athletes.
Unfortunately, I am not a full-time athlete. I'm not even a full-time cyclist at the moment, and it's super tough. There was a period there where I was working weekends as well for a while. And I guess you just do what you can with the time you have. I've managed to get some long rides in, but nowhere near what I used to. I guess you kind of rely on that memory. And your body knows how to go through the motions when it comes to the endurance stuff. I've been able to get lots of short blocks done through the week, and I've just been trying to ride everywhere and do extras and get out for some longer days when I can. It would have been nice to have had more time to do, like, 24-hour rides and stuff like that. So yeah, maybe I'm a bit underdone in there, but I don't feel like it. I feel good at the moment. My body's been responding well. I've been trying to, look after myself a bit more than normal, as in cutting out a bit of the crap food that I'll eat at the end of the race. But yeah, I think I'll be okay. The first few days is always really tough, and then the middle bit hurts, and then the end bit's a bit tough, and then it's over. So it's forever, but it's quick.
I guess the other thing too is... sense.
But I don't know what it means in my head.
I know what you mean.
Slowly but suddenly.
The other part of it too, so it sounds like you're pretty confident at going in, you might have liked to have done some more riding, but it's not, I mean, the physical part's only a small part of the whole game, right? So.
But you still use a lot of energy just doing your day-to-day stuff. It might not be on the bike, but when you're working, 8, 9, 10, some of my days have been 11, 12 hours, and then you're still riding in the morning and the night. Like, it still requires you to be constantly moving. It's you use a lot of energy with all that other stuff too, but yeah, it is, it's really hard with a full-time job, and I'm in a position where I've managed to still have work after these last couple of years, and we're very busy at Curve, so very fortunate for that. But unfortunately, it can't go on hold for me to go and ride my bike 5 days a week. I wish it could. I wish we all could, because we sell bikes, and every time it's a sunny day, we're all inside. So it's a tough one.
Now, the other really cool thing about this race is the support that we're trying to give, continue support to the Misaka Cycling Club as well. So are you excited to meet
I can't wait to meet them. Yeah, I'm looking forward to meeting Florence and the boys, Kato and Waswa. So that'll be wonderful. So that's a massive bonus, and I guess for them, seeing all these people coming to their country too will be pretty cool.
We're onto their continent.
Well, continent. Not country. Yeah.
Best thing. We'll have look out for the Misaka.
Geography.
Look out for the Misaka challenge.
Africa. Yeah. Sorry.
Look out for the Misaka challenge coming up. Maybe we'll do do a race there, or an expedition or a tour or something, starting and finishing in Masaka, New Guinea.
Jesse says maybe, but this is already boiling in the background, so it's cute that he's just dropped that in there. So, oh, that sounds like a great idea. I wonder where we could do it. There's a nice lake over there, isn't there?
Yeah, Lake Victoria?
That's a good idea. Yeah, what a great idea. Maybe we could ride around it.
Wow, Kilimanjaro is not too far off, you know. We've got the Maasai. Like, it's...
Someone runs out and puts this race on before us, we're in trouble. Yeah.
Wouldn't be the first time that's happened, would it? Anyway. So thank you very much, Sarah. Tired calling you Sarah because everyone calls you Teef, obviously.
You call me Teef.
She doesn't like being called Sarah. She loves being called Teef, yeah, obviously. One of the other things, too, that I'm really interested in knowing is how you're going to go without nutritional yeast.
I've got a bag. For a sounds so weird to people that don't know what you're talking about. They're questioning why I need to carry the yeast with me. It's Abdullah gets it. Abdullah's been in Melbourne for 3 days and gone without it, and he said he's twitching over it. So for all those vegans out there, you know what I mean. Like, one spoon's not enough. It's just a source of protein, vitamin B, and it tastes delicious on everything. So I do have a bag in my bike box just to indulge in for the week leading up to the race. I don't just eat it out of the bag. I put it on food. It looks like fish food and it smells like cheese. But yeah, there's a small group of people out there listening that will get this. But
so you're going to be loading up your saddle pack in the race?
I wouldn't mind if that was all that was in there because it doesn't weigh anything. So if that's all I have to carry, it'd be great.
Okay, Sarah, well, thank you very much for your time. You're off to the airport very soon, within an hour.
1 hour.
And we're very excited to see how you go. We'll be following on keenly from back at base here in the Dream Factory, Curve HQ.
The ocean at the moment.
I know. You'll be looking forward to getting away from the rain.
So much rain. It's insane.
You can probably hear it on the microphone.
Australia's become the wet country.
It's just amazing.
It just doesn't stop.
You're going to be looking forward to getting away from it for a little bit.
I hope our plane takes off tonight too.
Well, thank you very much, Sarah. All the best of the race. And we look forward to seeing how it unfolds. Okay, we're here with Stephen Lane, who is buried deep in a bowl of noodles.
2 minute noodles in a hurry to get to the airport.
Yep, I know nutrition is close to your heart. So final prep. So you're on the way to the airport pretty much, ready to do the Rhino Run. It's all very exciting.
Yeah, I'm just glad to leave Australia, to be honest. It's just the prep for these races, just mentally and everything leading up to it. It's just kind of, once you get on the plane, you kind of just go, okay, now I just want to start pedaling.
Yeah, so there's a lot of gear to muck around with, bikes to select.
Choose what wheels to run.
Which wheels to run. Tires.
It's been a bit of a nightmare. Couldn't quite get the ideal what I wanted, but we've got the next best thing, I think.
So how has that... that sort of process gone? What have you were starting out with the GMX Plus and then you thought, oh...
Well, no, this was never the GMX Plus. For GMX Plus, I rode at Race from the Rock, but it was never going to be taken to South Africa in my mind. It was all about Kev. Only because, I don't know, just speaking to Rhino and stuff, it was like, oh, yeah, I'm taking Kev. So I was like, well, I guess I'm taking my Kev. And then as we got closer, I start to see him swap out wheels to these bigger, chunkier ones. And I'm like, man, I don't have the same fork as you. I can't do that. He's like, oh, yeah, you'll run. Then I couldn't get the tyres that I wanted. And then, so in the end, I've gone 650 Bs, 2.1s, and gone, that'll do.
So it's, it's never a... It's always hard to work out what to use, right? And it's untested, this course,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, like so in Australia, we kind of know what the roads are like, but... And when it's 3,000 Ks long, there's, you know, it starts off where you can run a, you know, a small tyre, and then you get to that further up and you're like, yeah, I wish I had a big tyre. So what do you choose? The fast one or the slower one but a bit more comfy?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I'm sure different people will be making different selections. Have you seen any interesting bike choices amongst the field?
I haven't seen any yet.
Tyre choices,
Have not seen anyone else's bikes yet. I've tried to have a bit of a look to see what the locals might be running, but there's not really too many locals really around.
Yeah, not much to go by.
No.
You have to be all in the last the last sort of 48 hours as everyone converges on Plettenberg Bay. Mm.
And by then it's too late. Maybe I just bring an extra set of wheels with me and just leave them there.
Have all the bases covered. Yeah. Or you could have the decoy bike. You could basically show up with a race form.
I've done that before. For Mallee Blast, I did my pre-race video and I put all my bike packing gear on the time trial bike because it was flat. And I was like, all right, running this bike, it's going to be flat and fast. And then about 2 minutes in, I kind of looked at the camera and went like, you don't really think I'm running this, do you? And then bought the gravel bike in.
Well, that's the thing. I haven't seen too much of the head games yet. I mean, we've got to get some of that sort of thing happening.
Me and Abdullah are pretty good mates, and you know, I know he has some strengths and I have some strengths, and we kind of give each other a poke here and there, but we both love each other deep down.
Yeah, I saw him trying to get involved with the sealant top up in your bike earlier today. I think it was like meant to be 105 mils. I think he might have shortchanged you by about 4 mils.
Oh, look out. So what, I took all of his out when he was in here doing the podcast.
Nothing like a bit of pre-race sabotage. Good to see. Now, it's a pretty exciting lineup for this race.
It is, isn't it?
So what are you thinking?
Big
you
time now. I don't know. Like, I know there's a lot of people with a lot more experience than me, so I'm already on the back foot. To be honest, man, I was stressing myself out over it a while back, but I kind of had a bit of an epiphany moment where I just went, my only job is to get from the start to the finish in the best way I see fit at the speed I think I can do it, in the, you know, the sleeping pattern I think I can do it. I'm not going to look at my tracker on my phone. Like at Race from the Rock, I was looking at it all the time, going, oh, if I put more time into them, this, that just stresses me out. So I'm literally touring this thing as if I'm the only one there, but doing it as quick as I can. And yeah, I know I learnt from Race from the Rock that you can't do this, go fast and have fun at the same time. So I'm prepared for some hurt. But yeah, we'll see. I think the first 3 days is interesting because it's super hilly and that's kind of my terrain. So I think I'll be at the pointy end after the first 3 days. But then I'm kind of like, okay, now the big boys are going to come out to play here when it comes to not stopping. So we'll see. That's sort of, I guess, the main things I've been thinking about.
So yeah, it's interesting. You've had some really good success in some shorter form races. You sort of dipped the toe in a bit with Race from the Rocks.
If only I had to finish that, everyone might have had a bit more confidence in me as well. But
it looked like, talking to you after that, or before it even, you were sort of, it didn't seem like you were, you know, death before DNF, you know, rah, rah, rah. You were sort of just going in as a bit of a shakedown to see what it was all about. But I don't know, maybe.
It was literally a training block for this, and it was good, perfect timing. And I learned a lot from it, not like physically, like I felt strong for those 7 days. Like I didn't falter at all body wise. But mentally I learned where you need to be, and I learned a lot about just a little bit more. I thought I was efficient already, to be honest, but I learned a lot about efficiency of not stopping. I think I've had the conversation with myself this time where, and it's actually your words, where you've got to tell yourself, all right, we're getting to the finish no matter what. I don't think I had that conversation with myself at Race to the Rock. I kind of just made the assumption it was going to happen. So yeah, I'm at the finish line mentally now.
Oh, that's good. So with the shorter form stuff that you've done, which might have been 2 or 3 days even.
Yeah.
How did that compare to the, you know, going out there for, you know, a week even with Race from the Rocks? How did that compare?
Going long is easier. Like those short ones, like Vic Divide and Mallee Blast, where it was like, you know, 36 to 50 hours where I didn't sleep at all. I was pushing a lot harder than what I do now for these multi-day ones. So I have backed it off. Like I'm not going my harder pace. I think what else is different about them? There's really not that much different. Like it's just, I guess, being mindful that I've got to sleep and that it will catch up with me progressively as time goes on. I still haven't mastered that, I don't think. I don't know what my best sleep sort of approach is. But, you know, I'm just going to ride as long as I can each day and sleep when I need to and try and coincide that with the timing of the sun coming up.
So you've been on an interesting arc through your cycling career, I guess. How did you land doing this sort of stuff?
I've always been sort of roadie, you know, I've been sort of national level road stuff, masters of late for the last 5 or 10 years. Bought a gravel bike and I've pretty much never ridden a road bike since. I just went, this is so much better. And I've just lived in places where gravel's really good. And then going long sort of happened. The first one I ever did was Jam for Jamison. That was only 300 Ks and like 13 or 14 hours. But I just went like, I love just riding all day. And then I live in the Otways, so for me, riding is just going, oh, I've literally got a map of roads I've ridden, and I just try and tick all of them off. Like people do, what do they call it on Strava, where you ride all the roads in your neighborhood?
Oh, okay.
Like I'm trying to do that pretty much in the Otways, which is like a very big area. So I just disappear and ride all day, come home. Luckily, my lifestyle, because I'm a cycling coach by trade, I can sit on the couch at night time and work. So I just try and make some phone calls in the morning and ride my bike all day. So it kind of works well for getting the Ks done that I need to for this sort of stuff.
It's fantastic. Interesting you're talking about Jam for Janice, and that's it's such an awesome ride, that one.
It's amazing.
I was looking at that originally when I was planning to do the Tour Divide, like years ago, like 10 years ago. And I thought, okay, well, it was a touch over 300 Ks, right? So I was like, that's a Tour Divide day.
Yeah.
So you just do it in a day, see what it feels like, load up your bike, and then that's at least a bit of a dry run of a day.
And back then, though, I thought 300 was like crazy. Mm. But on the year we did it, there was a 400K option, and one crazy person went out all by themselves to do it. And I was like, there's no way you can do that. But now, like, I'm doing, you know, we're doing 300 or 400K days in these races, you know, days on end. So,
yeah, it's funny, the numbers don't really matter anymore. I remember those days, like, first starting to ride a bit longer, you know, as a younger, it's like you couldn't stop at 99Ks, right? You had to make sure it was 100.
I can these days, yeah. I don't care. It doesn't funny. Matter.
It's that transition point. Where
maybe it's 1,000 now. If I've just still got 1,000 on the head unit, I'm like, I better roll over 999 to get to 1,000.
It's funny, isn't it? Now, so with the course, it's a bit of an untested course. Have you studied the route?
Yeah, as best I can. It's hard to tell on paper, on an Excel spreadsheet with a sort of race logistics. Looking at it on a map, it's just impossible to tell, I think, you know, how hard sections are, how slow sections are, how hot it is, you know, what's actually available. So, you know, I've got my course logistics there. I've got it in my head and broken it up into sections. I've kind of mapped out how far I'd like to get to each day, but that could all fall apart after day one. So
which parts of the course do you think will play in your favour?
Well, as first, the entree part, that first 750 with 11,000 metres of climbing, I think that's where hopefully, you know, going up a hill, I just naturally tend to go faster. Maybe I won't. In previous races I have, there may be athletes in this race that, you know, are on par with me. Hey, it might actually be nice to have some company, to be honest, for a few days. Usually when I've raced all these long ones, I'm off the front in the first 10Ks and I don't see anyone. So this might completely put a twist on it and be a different scenario for me.
So how do you think, before I get into that, are there any parts of the course that look a bit scary to you or intimidating?
Crossing the border into Namibia, or that's very slow drag. Once we sort of head north and then it slowly drags up and the altitude increases, like I hate a false flat. And looking on that map, it's like a false flat for 2,000 kilometres. It's crazy. I think my biggest fear is being cold. I hate being cold. So the desert at nighttime kind of worries me a bit, especially because it's at altitude. But I just don't know. Like I know what cold feels like here, maybe over there it's a different, you know, different cold.
And how do you think the race is going to play out? You know, what's going to happen? Do you think we've got a lot of hitters involved? How's it going to play out?
Well, I think our tried and tested crew of, I guess, who's our three biggest? We've got Sofiane, Lael, and Abdullah. Abdullah's out of his comfort zone on gravel this time, but we know he's a machine. You know, Abdullah and Sofiane are renowned for not sleeping in the first few days. So I think if I'm anywhere near those two in after 3 days, I'll be happy. I know they're still going to be strong in the second half. I don't think there's any... I want to be with them from the start. I don't think I'll be, you know, negative splitting this course and pulling them back, but we know anything can happen to anybody anywhere along the course. Yeah, I don't know, man. It could be anyone. There's names in there that I know are good that I don't even know how they'll go on this course. So, you know, there could be... You've got a good list. It's going to be I think this is probably going to be one of the closest races of you know, these big international races we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how it plays out. I think it's an untested route. I think some of the conditions out there might be unfamiliar to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Particularly some of the, you know, rugged desert roads and, you know, all that sort of bone jarring corrugated stuff. So yeah, it'll be very interesting. Fascinating to see how it plays out. A lot of big names. There'll be a lot of people eager to, you know, charge off the front at the start. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens when it all settles down. The other thing I'm interested in as well. So with this race, we're obviously supporting Masaka Cycling Club too.
Yeah, which is so that's very pretty cool.
I've got some of the young Masaka crew coming out for their first hit out in a bikepacking event. So excited to see them.
Yeah, it'll be cool. Like, I see a lot through Masaka Cycling Club and, of course, Ross Burridge, and seeing, you know, what the world has done to help this. Is it Uganda? Uganda? Mm. Yeah. The Uganda cycling team sort of, you know, become a world stagey sort of scenario. Look, there's a lot of people there I'm looking forward to. I'm a bit of a fanboy of a few people there, so I'm looking forward to just going up and saying hello to a few people. I hope I get to see them beforehand, because we don't get to chat during the race really, and at the end of it, you know, chatting's not really what you want to do either. So it'd be nice to hang out with a crew and have a beer beforehand.
Yeah, well, hopefully a few of the races will be in Plettenberg Bay a little bit early. Can all hang out. I think there's going to be a bit of a get-together.
Yeah, cool. Maybe
on the Wednesday before, I think.
Yeah.
Beach barbecue.
Yeah, sweet.
Bri, I think.
Is this on? I haven't got an invite yet. I haven't seen it.
Mate, no, it's only the big names, mate. Yeah. Nah, just there. No, I think there'll be a bit of a get-together. I think Rhino's planning to dust off the barbecue or Bri. Pull it out onto the beach, Plettenberg Bay. So that could be fun. Good to get the riders together. It's always a bit of fun before the start.
Cool.
So, excellent. Now, in terms of how your prep has been for the race, how has it gone?
I'm going to say I've had the perfect lead up. Race from the Rock was perfect timing. I was feeling a little bit underdone, and like, just not underdone. My fitness is always good. It's just the, you know, it's hard going out for training rides where you ride into the night and you're dealing with sleep deprivation and stuff. So you need that little bit of exposure to it just to mentally turn the switch on and go, okay, this shit's hard. And I think after that, physically, my mental game came up to my physical game. It was like, all right, I'm ready to hurt long now. You know, my body's always fine prep wise. Like, I can ride a bike and I don't get anything that, you know, no niggles and stuff that you tend to get if you don't do a heap of K's. I've had plenty of time to ride the bike I'm riding and the setup I'm taking. In that sense, prep, so mentally good, physically good, mechanically good, logistically maybe good. We can't really test that till I'm there. So I guess they're my four main areas.
And I think also on Race from the Rocks as well, you learnt some, probably some new skills there. You called us one night. You'd had a good day. The rain had finally stopped for a bit. And I remember you just saying you needed to talk to someone at SRAM because your Axis battery had been underwater for hours on end.
Well, the whole derailleur had been underwater and the dynamo hub had been underwater and they were still working.
Yeah, it was hilarious. You're saying, no, you don't understand. The hub, the bottom bracket, everything underwater. It's still working. I need to talk to SRAM.
I think I'm just trying to get a sponsorship from it. Maybe I thought I was... I can be a product tester or something like that.
But I think that was, it just goes to show some of the stuff that can, you can talk about all this training and all that sort of thing, but at the end of the day in these races, you can be faced with a wall of water and work shit, what are we going to do?
Well, so you're in trouble because I called you guys on the one sunny day we had then, and that's how happy I am when it's sunny. So if we, because Race from the Rock was wet every other day, so that's how happy I am in sunshine. So, look out, everyone. If I've got 7 or 8 days of sunshine for this race, then I'm going to have a smile.
Tell you what, looking at the conditions through Namibia, it's certainly going to be pretty hot.
Yeah.
So you're happy in those hot conditions?
If I've acclimatised enough, it's been pretty hard to acclimatise to anything here in Australia at all for the last 6 months. It hasn't been over 20 degrees, so I'm a little bit worried about it. But, like usually I'm even pretty good, like, you know, 3 days of sunshine and my skin turns brown and I sort of have this extra built-in protection, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to get sunburnt because I just haven't been exposed to the sun for a while. So I've done all I can to limit that with sun sleeves and sunscreen, even my haircut. I've grown my hair long on the back of my neck. So I'd wait till you see my haircut, everybody.
Oh, my gosh.
Jesse hasn't seen it yet. Look at this go. Look at that.
Wow, they're not going to let you into the country.
Shaolin monk haircut, that is.
The Shaolin... It's almost like a Shaolin Bogan. Shaolin Bogan. It's like, to describe it, it's like, well, it was, I mean, he did have the classic mullet, but now it's so business at the front. It's like, it's
and there's nothing at the front. It's all at the back.
And it's all party at the back.
Yeah.
No, that's great. Now, have you checked out the PhD category of the race? Who are you lining up against in the PhD category?
Oh, how many doctors are in this race?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking. You know, is it a stacked field or have you got the PhD category?
Maybe. Nailed? I've got the exercise scientist category, maybe. Mm. See, I'm kind of built for this stuff. PhD in exercise science, recent long. I actually called a guy called Alan McCubbin who does all his research is on dehydration and sodium intake on ultra endurance events. And I've been chatting with him about like osmotic and hydrostatic pressures and what we can do to limit edema and all sorts of things. And I was like, all right, I'm down with this. Apparently there's nothing I can do about it though.
You just understand why you swelled up.
Trying to figure out, because when I pulled out a Race from the Rock and I was all like swollen on the train on the way home, I was like, I wonder why this happened. And I know why. Give me a big whiteboard and I can show you a really cool video of like all the capillary beds and what happens.
Look, sometimes it's just better not knowing, isn't it?
But if you know, you can fix it sometimes. This case, no.
Yeah, it's a fascinating area. Like I haven't, I mean, you're probably across the research in this area a bit more, but I haven't seen, I mean, I'm a science guy as well by trade. So, but there's, it just seems that there's not a lot of research into this ultra endurance stuff.
No.
And the weird things that your body goes through.
Maybe we put our legs up on a table and get a biopsy maybe we do it at the barbecue at the beach. We can get a biopsy out of everyone's leg before the race and we'll get another one at the end and we can help science a bit.
Mate, if you're able to do that, look, there's only one person I think who'd be able to do that. It'd be Rhino. Rhino could talk anyone into that. I'd be very impressed.
He talked me into this race pretty easily.
Oh, look, it's going to be really exciting to see how it unfolds. You're off to the airport in 20 minutes, so we'll let you get going. So, yeah, all the best, Stephen. Good luck in the race.
Thank you.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing how it all unfolds.
No, I'm looking forward to starting pedaling, to be honest. I just want to get this thing going. Pumped.
Awesome. Thanks, Stephen.
Thanks, mate.
So there you have it. Three different perspectives from three very different riders, just 1 week out from the start of the Rhino Run. Look, all three of them were very confident, I think, quietly confident, although you can hear the nervous anticipation in their voices at times. I really enjoyed talking to Abdullah. I haven't had much of a chance to talk to him in the past, so hopefully didn't get too esoteric there talking about some of the experiences of ultra endurance racing. But I guess when you've had those experiences, it's always fun to share them with others who have. Abdullah's keeping his cards close to his chest, which is a smart move, but I'm sure his plan is a super bold one, a very ambitious one. So I'm very excited to see if he can pull it off in this new forum for him, going off-road, having done so well in road events in the past. Sarah also sounded quietly confident. She, although a little bit more battle-hardened, I guess, I think she knows what's ahead of her in terms of that remote, rugged, corrugated sort of outback experience that she knows so well from Race to the Rock. I get the feeling that she suspects some of her competitors might not know what they're getting themselves into in that respect, in terms of that full body, bone jarring experience of you know, thousands of kilometers of corrugations. And then Stephen Lane, newcomer to this sort of racing, you could hear that nervous anticipation in his voice, super excited about lining up against the world's best. I think all three of them are capable of winning this race. So it'll be fascinating to see how these guys on the Curve squad go. Very excited to see it all unfold. Also exciting too is the race is supporting the Masaka Cycling Club. Riders don't pay an entry fee. They make a donation to the Masaka Cycling Club in order to enter the Rhino Run. So if you want to help the cause at the Masaka Cycling Club, helping uncover and support fantastic Ugandan cycling talent, please go to www.masakacyclingclub.com and check it all out. Support the cause like we have here at Curve. Three very talented riders, probably the fittest of the whole field, are going to show up. Three Masaka riders from Uganda are showing up to race the Rhino Run. Look, we spoke a bit about it in the interviews with the three today, and they're all excited to meet the Masaka squad and see how they go in the big race. Now, to check it all out, to follow the race, go to rhinorun.cc. There you'll find everything you need, information on the course, how to track it. It'll all be tracked live on Map Progress. Riders will all have GPS trackers where they'll all turn into little dots on a page and you can follow along. And hopefully we'll have some great coverage for you guys as well to follow along at home and perhaps live vicariously through the riders and enjoy your own experience. So that's it for today. Thanks for joining us on the Race Ride Seat podcast. Hopefully we'll see you again soon. See you out on the trails.